Case number 11-1423, Communities for a Better Environment et al. Petitioners v. Environmental Protection Agency. Mr. Lopez for the petitioners, Mr. Doyle for the respondent.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. My name is Nick Lopez, and I am with the University of Denver Environmental Law Clinic. I represent the petitioners and the interveners in this case. Your Honors, I'd like to reserve 2 minutes of my time at the end for rebuttal as well. Now, Your Honors, I know that in the recent past, this Court has seen a number of similar challenges brought forth under the Clean Air Act. But our case is different, and it's different for three important reasons. First, carbon monoxide is the only criteria pollutant identified in 1971 to have never undergone a revision to its primary standard. Never, not even once in 42 years. Additionally, Your Honor, this case implicates environmental justice principles. Carbon monoxide impacts more than just the general public. It disproportionately impacts urban, low-income populations and various minority populations. And finally, Your Honors, this case is different because it's not about the technicality of the evidence or the studies, as opposing counsel has argued in his briefs, but rather it's about EPA's inadequacy in their explanation for providing disparate treatment to the epidemiological evidence between rulemakings and within the rulemaking for carbon monoxide.
It seems to me that in your opening brief, you, sort of in a general way, criticized the government, the EPA, for its treatment of the epidemiological evidence here. But you, I didn't see in that brief any comparison between the treatment here and the treatment in the other rulemakings. I saw that in your reply brief, but that's just too late to raise an issue.
Well, Your Honor, we do, you're correct in the assumption that in our reply brief we do mention the NO2 and SO2 cases.
And in my understanding, you don't make a comparison in your opening.
Your Honor, I'm not entirely sure if we did, but I do know that we did include those rulemakings in the joint appendix for your review. And those are important to recognize.
It's nice to tell us why something might be relevant.
Your Honor, even setting the comparison to those rulemakings aside, it's important to recognize the disparate treatment that the epidemiological evidence received in the rulemaking itself.
We can hold off on disparate, okay? That depends on the comparison between rulemakings. Just sort of flat out blindness to the epidemiological evidence, and that seems to disregard the EPA's explanation as to why it found the epidemiological evidence here not particularly compelling.
Your Honor, I think you're referring to the confounding issues that the EPA...
That's one of them.
Yeah,
and that's one of four, and another one which seems to be perfectly easy to get one's hands around is uncertainties related to the representation of ambient CO exposures given the steep concentration gradient near roadways.
Well, Your Honor, I'd like to address each of those confounding factors one by one, if that's okay. And I'll start with the steep gradient issue that is described in the EPA's brief. Now, Your Honor, although it may be true that steep gradients may exist for carbon monoxide, the EPA has failed to provide an explanation as to how those steep gradients are in some way different than steep gradients that may occur in other criteria pollutant rulemakings, where the EPA was able to move past that issue and give consideration to the epidemiological studies.
Did you raise that issue in your opening brief? I didn't see in your opening brief any attack on the EPA's specific reasons for downweighting the epidemiological evidence.
Well, Your Honor, let me talk specifically about co-pollutants when I answer that question, because in our opening brief we do discuss their analysis of co-pollutants and specifically the use of regression models to minimize the effects of co-pollutants. So the EPA has admitted within the ISA, within this rulemaking, within others, that the use of what are called multi-pollutant regression models are the commonly used approach for limiting the effects of co-pollutants, which are one of the confounding issues that EPA cites that limit the ability of the EPA to use that evidence. But within the rulemaking process itself, many of...
Just to be clear, multiple regression analyses are not a sure-proof way of getting around confounding variables. So I'm sure the EPA knows, and you probably know.
I completely agree, Your Honor, and we are not arguing that epidemiological evidence can be completely ignore or disregard the effects of confounding. But what the EPA does acknowledge is that those confounding issues can be limited. And, in fact, they did so in the nitrogen and sulfur dioxide rulemakings, but didn't do so in the case of carbon monoxide. And I think it's important to note that in one of the cases this court heard last year, National Development Association, the EPA defended the use of epidemiological evidence against industry challenges when industry was making the same arguments that the EPA makes today, that being that confounding issues specifically related to co-pollutants limit the ability of the EPA to make those decisions. And in that case, the EPA defended the use of those because those studies used multi-pollutant regression models and showed positive and robust associations when accounting for other co-pollutants.
Does the EPA, I guess this goes to a broader question, EPA under this statutory scheme has a fair amount of discretion in how it looks at the scientific evidence, makes policy judgments. No two cases, I think, are exactly alike, which I think is the premise of your assertions here, that they have to be similarly treated, but they're not. There's no way to say they're exactly alike. There's too many different variables going on in the EPA's analysis.
Well, that's right, Your Honor, and we're not arguing that this court rule on the EPA's discretion to promulgate a final rule for carbon monoxide. And as this court held just a few months ago in Mississippi versus EPA, it's a very difficult line for petitioners to meet to overcome that discretionary nature. But this court also did hold that the EPA must provide a reasoned explanation for each step of its analysis. And our contention is that the EPA has failed to provide an explanation as to why the epidemiological evidence for carbon monoxide that used regression models and showed positive and robust associations should be excluded and not given more weight or consideration.
I thought they explained it, maybe picking up on Judge Williams' point here in multiple ways. You don't agree with the explanation, but it's not like the kinds of cases where we often have a lack of reasoned explanation as the agency just omitted discussion of some key point raised. I don't think that's what happened here.
Well, Your Honor, I would slightly respectfully disagree with that contention, being that the EPA has simply stated confounding factors in general terms and stated stated co-pollutants, the fact that some of the studies weren't conducted in areas meeting the current standard, and that steep gradients exist that limit the usefulness of the epidemiological studies. But in all of the rulemakings, including the nitrogen and sulfur dioxide rulemakings, EPA went a step further in explaining how it was able to differentiate the epidemiological studies that could limit the effects of those confounding issues. And in those cases, it relied upon epidemiological studies.
Can you point to any place in your opening brief where you talk about the problem of confounding variables?
Yes, Your Honor. Let's see here.
In the discussion of epidemiological evidence.
Your Honor, I'm looking for it now, but in the final rule itself for carbon monoxide, the EPA does list those variable confounding issues, the three that I have explicitly explained.
Yes.
And so...
So where in your brief did you attack that? The object of the system of briefs is to give the appellee a chance to defend against criticisms by the appellant. Right?
Yes, Your Honor, and if I could direct you to page 43 of petitioner's opening brief. And there, we describe how the EPA stated that there are uncertainties associated with the epidemiological evidence, complicating the quantitative interpretation of the epidemiological findings. And if you go to the next paragraph, we even go on to state how the EPA describes those as suggestive of a causal relationship and how it disregarded those evidence. Now, it's important to recognize that in the ISA, the EPA created a multi-tier approach in determining the strength of causal relationship. And the suggestive of a causal relationship indication we have there, we list there, was described for the epidemiological studies for carbon monoxide, where the clinical studies that were relied upon, like the ALRED study, which I'll note is 20 years old and conducted on a small subset of men, but that study was
particularly vulnerable men, if I recall.
That may be the case, Your Honor, but it's our belief.
My recollection is that there was a finding not only were they particularly vulnerable among men, but they were, their vulnerability was such as to place them sort of at the apex of vulnerability.
That may be the case 20 years ago, Your Honor, but what's important to remember is that these clinical studies, since they were conducted 20 years ago, they do not represent the diverse population and the diverse health effects that may...
Despite new foci on other vulnerable populations, my recollection is the EPA found the men in that study to be still as vulnerable as you could get for populations.
And I'm glad you brought that up, Aaron, because that goes to the point I was about to make, that being that the only reason that the clinical studies in some way were differentiated than those in the epidemiological studies were based on this characterization by the EPA that some relationships were suggestive of a causal relationship, those being the epidemiological evidence, and others were likely causal relationships, those being the clinical data. But in the ISA, the EPA indicates that really the only difference between those two characterizations is the effects of confounding. And as I've indicated, the EPA should have considered epidemiological evidence that did consider the confounding issues, whether that be for co-pollutants or the fact that some of the epidemiological studies were actually included in the ISA itself, included in areas meeting the current standard, and the fact that there's no indication that steep gradients in some way were different for carbon monoxide than they were for other rulemakings. And so because EPA needed to provide a rational explanation as to why those epidemiological studies are somehow different, it has failed to meet its obligation, and therefore its rulemaking was arbitrary and capricious. And, Your Honor, it's important to recognize that the petitioners deserve to know what is required by law through the arbitrary and capricious standard, why EPA has not provided an explanation as to why this different treatment exists. And, Judge Williams, you mentioned that the comparison between rulemakings may not be adequate, but I think it's important to also recognize that there was disparate treatment within the rulemaking itself. The EPA does consider and justify epidemiological studies, but only for those epidemiological studies that show a strong association to support their position that individuals with coronary artery disease are the most susceptible population. All other epidemiological studies that indicate health effects that aren't related to cardiovascular disease or coronary artery disease that show the same positive and robust associations when they include regression models and after accounting for other co-pollutants are simply considered too limited by the EPA to be considered.
So is your position that they didn't explain it or that given the state of the evidence they couldn't reach the conclusion they did?
Our position is that they didn't explain why they wouldn't be able to reach that decision, where in other rulemakings they were able to take it a step further and provide an explanation.
Do you think they, given the record, could reach the conclusion they did?
Your Honor, we think that if the EPA goes back and looks at the evidence and tries to provide an explanation as to why the epidemiological evidence in some way is too limited, it will be unable to do so, simply because that explanation doesn't exist. And therefore, it would be required to consider the important epidemiological conclusions.
That's why it seems like your challenge, and I understand why you're making it the way you're making it, but your challenge ultimately is that it's substantively unreasonable to reach this conclusion on the state of the record.
Well, Your Honor, I would respectfully disagree. I think procedurally, the EPA has failed to provide a rational explanation. And by law, they're required to do so. Now, it is our contention that when they do go back and look at it, the evidence will show that they'll come to different conclusions. But all we're asking this court to do right now is remand it to the EPA so that they give it consideration.
You want them to explain something that, in your view, is inexplicable.
That is correct, Your Honor, because they have the obligation to do that. And if they can't provide an explanation for doing it, then they have no other reason to not consider the important conclusions brought forth in the epidemiological studies. See that I'm running out of time, Your Honor, so I will reserve the last few moments of my time for a rebuttal, unless there's any other questions.
Thank you. Thank you.
May it please the Court, Andrew Doyle with David Orland for the respondent EPA. The Clean Air Act rule at issue here should be found to be valid. I'll start with the main argument of petitioners that the EPA failed to explain its consideration of the epidemiological evidence. That claim fails. It's essentially an invitation for this Court to either reweigh the evidence or act as a referee between experts, neither of which the Court has made clear that that's the Court's role to do. With respect to the disparate treatment argument, Judge Williams, you're absolutely correct. This is a pivot by the petitioners. They did not talk about this in their opening brief. They raised it in the reply brief. They weren't particularly clear on this point to the extent they raised it at all to comments to the agency. But even setting all that aside, both the record here and the records for those two pollutants they highlight, nitrogen dioxide and sulfur dioxide, make clear there is no such disparate treatment. First, you have the notion that the petitioners are essentially trying to compare apples to oranges. Those cases have different records, and EPA made different case-specific analyses specific to them. But even as to the records, there are material differences. In the SO2 and NO2 rulemakings, EPA found an overlap and cohesion among disciplines, and therefore biological plausibility, that did not occur with respect to carbon monoxide. This court, in its two opinions on those pollutants, recognized that overlap. This is American Petroleum Institute versus EPA, 684 F3rd at 1351. That's the NO2 opinion. And then there's National Environmental Development Association versus EPA, 687 F3rd at 812. That's the SO2 opinion. If you want to drill down deeper in the SO2 and NO2 rulemakings, the highest concentrations observed in the epidemiological studies for those pollutants overlapped with the lowest concentrations producing effects in the controlled human exposure studies. And that gave EPA the confidence that it lacked here, that the effects were occurring at low concentrations. Here, particularly where concentrations are below the current standard, EPA lacked evidence that the ambient concentrations are causing the effects observed in the epidemiological studies. The record here, also, EPA is distinguishing carbon monoxide and the epidemiological evidence with respect to carbon monoxide as more complicated in terms of a quantitative interpretation of that evidence compared to other criteria pollutants. Joint Appendix 12, this is the final rule, is a very concise place to look for that explanation. EPA explained that the ambient levels for carbon monoxide are low, and that leads both EPA and KSEC to talk about the confusion of effects or confounding being particularly problematic for carbon monoxide. The KSEC quote to the similar effect is found at Joint Appendix 506. This is the last letter that KSEC, the Clean Air Scientific Advisory Council, wrote to the EPA. Now, in other respects as well, the complicating features associated with the epidemiological evidence for carbon monoxide are unique. Unlike all other criteria pollutants, carbon monoxide, the epidemiological studies for that use a different exposure and dose metric, air concentration, than that used in the key clinical studies, which is carboxyhemoglobin. And so even beyond those inconsistent metric issues, and I'm using petitioner's words at page 14 of their reply brief, EPA still found more complicating features unique to this record for epidemiological evidence. And Judge Williams, you mentioned one of them, and that's the issue of the gradient, and that gets into the risk of exposure error observed in those epidemiological studies. EPA explained this at Joint Appendix 12, but in addition, in the record, Joint Appendix 1060, there is a chart showing comparing the gradient for carbon monoxide compared to other criteria pollutants. The steep is far greater for carbon monoxide than those other pollutants. So the exposure error uncertainty factor is a significant, unique to carbon monoxide. There's also the issue of there's a sizable portion of the ambient concentration measurements, are either at or below the monitor methane detection levels. So even in the studies themselves, you can't tell what the level of carbon monoxide was with any precision to even begin to assess whether it's at that low concentration that's eliciting the health effect that's being observed.
Could you spend a minute on the issue of standard in relation to the secondary standard? At 699 of the Joint Appendix, we have staff conclusions saying that the effects of CO2 on climate actually provides them up there weak and direct and stronger but highly variable. Certain indirect effects. So, is the argument there that this is just sort of farther out on the curve of unlikelihood? It was not far out enough in Massachusetts versus EPA. Or is it that there's something characteristically different here in terms of the ubiquity of the effects?
I think it's the latter, Judge Williams, and here's why. Carbon monoxide is not one of the six greenhouse gases that the EPA looked at in their endangerment finding that was upheld by this court. Unique to carbon monoxide, we have this weak direct relationship. That's discussed in the same provision you cited. And then the indirect relations are, as you have noted, highly variable from place to place, dependent on localized conditions. And so what the EPA is saying is that we acknowledge this relationship between carbon monoxide and climate change, but because of these unique factors and also because there is no information in the record about what any concentration-based standard would do in terms of alleviating climate change.
I'm sorry, so develop that. Are you talking about the impact of an ambient standard on Mr. Nichols' bird watching, or are you talking about the impact of a standard on greenhouse warming ubiquitously?
We're double dipping. We're talking about both.
You're permitted to do that.
We're saying that neither in the rulemaking proceedings, nor in their brief, nor attached to any declaration, do we have an explanation for petitioners on the standing question why the injury, and that's a separate question, but assuming it's an injury in fact, how the tying that to any concentration-based standard that the EPA would set pursuant to the petitioner's wishes would redress that. But then on the merits, we have the EPA's own conclusion that the scientific information does not support setting a standard for the public welfare or climate change effects.
Well, that's just conclusion. And on the standing issue, at least a strong reading of Mass versus EPA would be that if there is the very slightest possible impact on global warming, everybody in the world has standing.
Well, this court takes a different
view. Strong Mass versus EPA.
This court takes a different view of Mass versus EPA. I'm not aware of a court taking the view you just stated. Perhaps there's one, but I just know this circuit in the Center for Biological Diversity opinion that we cite in our brief. I can give you the
yeah,
page.
No, I have that.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, this court states what, in their view, Massachusetts versus EPA stands for the proposition of standing. And it had to do with the fact that there was the state of Massachusetts, Commonwealth of Massachusetts, its property interests on the shoreline. So it was both a product of the state being a party and a concrete and particularized injury to the state on behalf of the people. It can't just be, as this court stated in Center for Biological Diversity, can't just be harm to the environment in general that everybody could experience. And they also got into.
Mr. Nichols does offer a specific injury, right?
That he enjoys watching birds.
The causal relationship.
Yes.
Yeah.
He talks about he enjoys watching birds as he bikes, and the birds are reducing because of climate change. That's his
right.
Two-breath summary of his injury, in fact,
right.
Allegation.
Right.
Well, that's an injury, right?
Well, we say it may not be under Center for Biological Diversity.
It's just not caused.
But we do focus on the redressability or causation, correct?
Yeah.
Which I think is clearly lacking here. And again, double-dipping, because for the same reason the EPA couldn't find a link that secondary standard would do any good. Petitioners haven't provided anything different or an explanation into their view of the world why there's a substantial probability that if they get what they want, that would make a difference.
Yes, I turn to the question of what any good means. I mean, in this domain, there seems to be a view at large that the most trivial reduction of greenhouse gases is ipso facto a good thing. And the lack of that reduction is ipso facto a bad thing.
Well, the EPA's view most assuredly is that all bets are off with respect to the six criteria pollutants they talked about in the endangerment finding.
Right.
That even a little bit of help from each one of those together makes a difference. But carbon monoxide, not part of that story.
And it's not part of that story because?
Because of these, there's no indication from the scientific evidence, which is assessed not just in a conclusion, but in the so-called integrated science assessment document.
Right.
That because of the highly variable and from place to place and the steep gradient issues get into this too, that setting a uniform concentration-based standard for carbon monoxide across the United States would not be linked to any appreciable change in climate. The scientists explained far better.
Important, right?
It does, but perhaps, you know, I don't want to put words in the EPA scientist's mouth. I'm going to defer to their staff assessment. And they may not have used the word appreciable. And to the extent that's a problem, I'm going to let them speak for themselves in the record where we've highlighted those analyses in the last part of our brief. Bear with me for one moment. The ALRED study came up, and the notion that that study involved men, and then there were other clinical studies in the record where it was mostly men but some women. We did explain that, as Judge Williams noted, it's in Joint Appendix 7 and also 61, which is the ALRED study itself, explains that there's a reason we chose only men, and that's because, as a general matter, carboxyhemoglobin levels are generally higher in men than in women. Petitioner's counsel is correct that, you know, they're learning more things as years go on, but both ALRED itself and the EPA acknowledged at Joint Appendix 474, they acknowledge these gender differences, but they're saying that more study needs to be done. But at the end of the day, these results from the human-controlled exposure study still remain the most clear evidence for this cause and effect at a very low concentration of carbon monoxide, which since 2009, all jurisdictions in the United States have been meeting. And if the court has no further questions, we ask that the rule at issue be affirmed and the petition be denied in part and dismissed in part.
Thank you, Mr. Doyle. Mr. Lopez, you have 1 minute.
Yes, Your Honor. I just want to make three really quick points in response to the EPA. First, to Judge Williams, your question earlier about why the NO2 and SO2 rulemakings weren't criticized in our opening brief. The reason that was because those rulemakings came after the opening brief was submitted. And so it's important to remember that the conclusions coming from those were included in the reply brief. And so that's that meets that explanation.
You still have the ability to indicate the methodological flaws in what the EPA had done.
Well, Your Honor, so let me compare it specifically to the NO2 and SO2 rulemaking, where in that rulemaking, the EPA heavily relied upon epidemiological studies on the basis that they were able to minimize those confounding issues.
Since the EPA had mentioned confounding area problem, you put on notice that that was a problem, you could have responded to it. Right? You don't have to wait for the EPA to do it in another case.
Well, Your Honor, our contention is that there was no explanation in the record as to why those confounding factors in some way could not be minimized in the case of carbon monoxide. Your Honors, I also want to spend a few minutes just talking about opposing counsel mentioned the Clean Air Scientific Advisory Committee. And as is indicated in our briefs extensively, we cite to different letters and recommendations by the Clean Air Scientific Advisory Committee where they mention that the EPA, they urge and recommend the EPA give greater consideration and more weight to the epidemiological studies over and over again.
But they're not bound by what the advisory committee says, right?
No, Your Honor, but they are bound to provide an explanation as to why they're differing from the from KSEC's position, and they failed to provide that explanation in this case when KSEC provided recommendations.
KSEC itself hedged a little bit there, as EPA points out in its brief.
Your Honor, the EPA does state, KSEC does state in a letter to the EPA that if the epidemiological evidence is given more weight and consideration as they recommend it, then a revision to the primary standard may be warranted based on that evidence. And so based on that conclusion,
the EPA took that and explained why they weren't going to give it, given all the factors, more weight here. So,
well, their explanation was simply confounding, as I've indicated. That's not adequate when one considers that the EPA could make that differential and limit the effects of confounding. Your Honor, I seem out of time. May I spend a few minutes just talking about the secondary standard, or
30 seconds?
30 seconds. Okay. Thank you, Your Honor. Opposing counsel mentioned Center for Biological Diversity to support his contention. I will say that the court in that case said that the alleged harm was simply harm to climate, and that's not true in our case. Mr. Nichols, a recreational aesthetic injury, is viewing various species of North American birds in their Colorado habitat. And we have demonstrated a causal connection between EPA's failure to set a secondary standard and his harm to aesthetic and recreational interests. That being, in the ISA, it indicates that there is a causal relationship between current concentrations of carbon monoxide and adverse effects to climate.
Also said that there's insufficient data to create a standard that could actually have any prospect of a favorable effect. And their brief says that they pointed to this gap, and no one tried to fill the gap, and that seemed to be true with your gray brief as well.
May I answer the question now? Okay, thank you. Well, first of all, Your Honor, as far as that the gap that the EPA claims, they also made similar contentions in Mississippi versus EPA and American Farm Bureau versus EPA. And this court held that the EPA still has an obligation to determine the level that's requisite to protect the public welfare. And that determination was not made in this case. And going back to the point about the relationship between carbon monoxide and the adverse effects on climate, that is the strongest causal relationship that the EPA found in this rulemaking. It was even stronger than the relationship that they relied upon to determine that populations with coronary artery disease are the most susceptible population. So with that said, we ask that the court remand this for further.
Are you a student?
I am, Your Honor, yes.
Well done.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. Lopez.
Thank you.
The case will be submitted.